kind of hard to start to like find the beginning of a conversation because I feel like conversations just like happen.
Yeah, and then eventually they turn into half demon, half goat Christmas icon.
The Krampus.
The Krampus. So, hi. Oh, we're here again. Hi, I'm Clark.
I'm Karina.
And this is It's Always Spooky.
It's Always Spooky.
I do really like our intro, though. It's fucking dope.
It is pretty good.
It's dope as fuck.
Yeah. I'm going to continuously act as if it's a song.
Right. Yeah. For the cold opens into the episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll never be a song.
Hey, never say never. It could
never
be.
Never say never. In the terms of poet of our generation, Justin Bieber.
Dude, I actually was watching a really, this should go into the cold open, but I was watching a video of him drunk at Kid Laroi's concert. Singing that bit from Stay, and oh my God, I need that as like a full like single release. Like it touched the bottom of my soul when I listened to it, and I've just like sat there and I watched it like 15 times.
I hate how talented he is.
Yeah, it's kind of disgusting.
Yeah.
That he could be that talented while like piss drunk.
Yeah. So yeah, because the second I'm drunk, remembering lyrics, gone.
Well, I mean, he did forget the lyrics.
He did.
But it didn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah. Remembering the lyrics, gone.
Gone.
Singing, gone.
Gone.
Standing up straight, gone. Although he also wasn't standing up straight. He was like laying on the floor.
No, that's what I mean. It's like he was bent over like piss drunk and he was able to pull that out. Just somewhere deep in his soul.
Yeah. Oh, God. Is that conditioning or is that just skill?
I mean, I don't know. I've been seeing some pretty shitty things coming out about P. Diddy lately. So it could probably be conditioning, if we're being honest.
Some shit about P. Diddy and a lot of pictures of P. Diddy's arm on Justin Bieber's shoulder.
Yeah. And, well, and I just know I don't know a lot about P. Diddy. This is, again, getting off topic. But, like, I don't even know, like, his relationship to Justin Bieber. But I've just been seeing a lot of people in the news talking about it, and I guess he was a mentor for Justin, so it just kind of makes sense, like, if you're hanging out with him a lot, there could be other wires that are crossed in there. But like I said, I'm so isolated from that. I've like just watched a couple of YouTubers talk about it and haven't really done any, like, I haven't watched any of the trial or anything.
Yeah, I would say most of my like pop culture information I probably actually get from Nick.
Yeah, that's probably accurate.
Yeah, I don't really well, I'm not on social media anymore.
That's true.
Which helps.
Yeah. The algorithm on both YouTube and just like my phone's news feed is a lot of pop culture because I love drama and I love gossip. So I'm sure that's why it's popping up for me. But I don't really have a lot of time to talk to like think about it right now.
Yeah. See, my favorite kind of drama is like white trash drama that reminds me of Living in Drain. Like, right. If I hear two people fighting outside, I'm at the window.
You're like, oh, yeah, I got to see this, right?
Yeah. I'm like, I just spawn a bag of popcorn out of nowhere and I'm like, I am so here for this.
Yes, fight.
Yeah. Yeah, the second that I hear a husband and wife start fighting, I'm like, all right, I'm listening.
Yep.
And then the second I hear the cops, I'm like, oh, I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
Windows open, I'm sitting on the counter looking out it, I don't give a fuck.
AirPod
if anybody
out.
Sees me.
Yep. Phone out, recording.
Yeah, I'm like, if you feel like you can have this fight outside, you're okay with an audience.
Yeah, obviously.
So,
yeah, absolutely. Gosh, I haven't seen a good old one of those in a while.
Yeah.
And we live in Portland, like, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what, I do see like people just shouting at the street sometimes, so.
Yeah.
Every once in a while.
They're having white trash drama with
just
the
themselves.
Person that they're imagining.
Exactly.
Is in front
yeah,
of them.
The psychosis is what's getting them, getting them down.
Yeah, their Fenty friend.
I think one of my paramedic friends was telling me that if they're dancing, it's meth.
Yeah. Yeah, that checks
I was
out.
Like, oh, okay. So yeah. Now every time I pass by somebody who's dancing, I'm just like, oh no. What if they're just happy?
No.
I don't want to think about that.
This is Portland. We're not happy.
No, not in the metro area at
least.
No,
we're on meth. But I'm trying to think the few times that I've accidentally done meth, I feel like, it was either dancing or like tinkering with things.
Mm-hmm.
Like either something needed to be fixed or like my problems needed to be fixed via the art of dance.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
This tracks. I think I would probably do the same things if I had ever tried it before.
Yeah.
Anyways, do you want to talk about Krampus?
Yeah, we can do
2015's
that.
2015's Krampus. I actually was really glad that you recommended this movie because I had never seen it before. Yeah, I'd never seen it before. I'm pretty sure I slept on it for a long time just because it didn't like meet those criteria for horror movies for me, right? It's PG-13. It's a creature feature. Mm-hmm. And it just looked it like... I didn't really even know much of the cast until I really got more into horror. And especially because like I've only ever known, who is it? David Kochner, who played Howard, and then Adam Scott, who played Tom. Like I've only ever seen those guys in comedies.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I don't really, you know, I knew it was going to be a different vibe for a movie. And it definitely was. It was definitely more like, I would call it a family horror movie.
Yeah.
Like not just because it centers around a family, but also because like I think you could watch this with like all the way up to like maybe 10-year-olds, I think could handle this movie.
Yeah.
Sure, parts of it would be kind of scary and, you know, like unsettling, but there's absolutely no gore whatsoever.
But also like slap on the back, gotta learn somewhere, kid.
Right. Like especially if you were a big horror fan yourself and you wanted to like indoctrinate the next generation into horror, like I would think this would be a much softer approach than like some of the other movies that I'm thinking of that were supposed to be softer approaches, like Scream.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Whereas my mom was like, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, that was mine too. Nightmare on Elm Street, yeah. The Ring.
Yeah.
the TV It.
But also, Kinshasa Ferrell, who plays Aunt Dorothy.
Oh my God.
Icon.
Oh God.
Icon.
When I
Rest
saw
in
her
peace.
Name on there, I was very happy because I remember her from 2.5 Men.
Yeah.
She was very prominent on that show.
She's also in, I'm trying to think of the movie. Is she in Mr. Deeds?
She might be in Mr. Deeds. It wouldn't surprise me if she was in a lot of those like Happy Gilmore production movies with like Adam Sandler. Like I don't think she was in The Water Boy.
I don't know.
We could look it up.
I could voice over it later.
Yeah, exactly.
I won't, but I could.
But I could if I really wanted to.
I have the capacity to do it.
Do you want to? Actually, before I get too far ahead of myself, the title card for this movie I thought was really fun.
It was pretty sick.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You're actually seeing the title card through the Christmas wreath in the toy store, and it's in this like pretty like Santa Claus writing, this like pretty fancy script. And then the tagline from IMDb is, "You don't want to be on his list."
Just like Epstein's. Don't want to be on that list.
Don't want to be on that list. Mm-mm.
But then from that like beautiful Christmas font title card from the window of the toy store, you enter into absolute chaos.
Yeah.
The opening scene for this movie is so good because I love that just right off the bat, it's like, here's how consumerism has ruined the holiday spirit.
Yeah, it's a very stark contrast to like you're listening to Christmas carol music and like, fa la la la, you know, welcome to the season holidays. And there are just people like running over each other and throwing items and ripping things out of each other's hands. Like it's just absolute fucking chaos. What is kind of like funny about it is that they do it so over the top in the movie, right? But like, I've never been to a Black Friday sale.
I won't.
I've worked a Black Friday sale at GameStop once, and that was probably the most orderly thing we could have done because everybody had to have like a serial number in order to pick up their console.
Oh.
But you know, like, I've never been to Walmart on a Black Friday.
No.
But we literally know about like people who have died during those events by being trampled or having things fall on them. So like, even though this is like an over dramatization of what like consumerism looks like around the holidays, it ain't that far off.
It's not that traumatized.
You're right, she wasn't Mr. Deeds. She was also in I thought this was interesting, she was in something I'd seen.
She's been in a lot of shit.
She was in The Ranch.
Yeah.
Fucking goddamn it, where was it? Oh, she was in Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah.
She's one of the neighbors. And she's like, she's iconic in this movie. Like her character is so good.
Like, oh my God. Well, teaching the kids how to make the peppermint schnapps hot chocolate.
Right.
And she's like, looks at that one that's dead in the eyes and she's just like, fine here.
Mm-hmm. I have a really funny piece of trivia for that later.
Oh, okay. Bring up
for that specific scene.
That's exciting.
Yeah. Do you want to do our little 60-second like recap?
Yeah. So I guess I didn't write one down, but if I were to just like rip one out of the ether,
you can do it.
A young boy named Max is trying to get himself into the holiday spirit, knowing that his extended family is going to be visiting. And he's noticing more and more that people are starting to lose the idea of what Christmas should be.
Yeah.
So he writes a letter to Santa asking for some specific things, and he ends up getting his wishes granted in a very not fun way.
It's a very much like a Home Alone situation, mm-hmm. right? Like, family, extended family comes together for the holidays. We all know that even though family is forever and blood is thicker than water, that like the holiday time is really stressful. And there's quite a few times that like you're hanging out with people that you don't necessarily like, you don't necessarily want to spend extended periods of time with. And just like in Home Alone, this main character kind of gets so far fed up to the point that they're just like, they make this wish of like, I hate you. I never want to see you again.
Yep.
And it just so happens that instead of just having St. Nicholas come on Christmas night, there could also be a darker alternative to that.
And I do like, it's not just like, oh, here's this random other thing that can happen around the holidays. They actually tie it to the correct culture, because the grandma is actually, I believe she's Austrian.
I think so, yeah.
But they immediately show what that reference is supposed to be by having somebody who is speaking German throughout the entire movie,
mm-hmm.
like right off the get-go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that cultural tie-in.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciated a lot of the finer details in this movie, truly. I actually watched quite a few breakdowns of like what is the history of Krampus as well. And so it was very interesting to listen to like how it's interpreted through different cultures,
yeah.
and how Krampus isn't necessarily like an entity, like a singular entity.
Mm-mm.
It's more of like a flavor of demon,
yeah,
that St. Nicholas uses to enact some of the darker versions of like his naughty or nice list.
Yeah, because so there's kind of the duality of like St. Nicholas being the person who is kind of the spirit of giving and
yeah.
the spirit of like holiday cheer and family togetherness and that sort of stuff. And then Krampus is supposed to be like this half goat, half demon that's there to handle the people who would have been on like what we now call like the naughty list.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like each different type of Krampus demon did something different, like would
yeah.
punish children in different ways. Kind of reminded me like the different layers of hell,
yeah,
and how they would punish people in like different forms depending on what they did in their life.
Yeah, because there's like whipping with
birch branches.
There's a few things. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones.
Well, there was one, we're going to talk about like some of the deaths in this movie, but like the hook,
mm-hmm.
like that was a specific yeah. demon that would like use a hook to, steal meat from from the fireplace, and like would also use that to lure and to take children to the
yeah.
underworld.
He's also very commonly depicted. Well, the demon is depicted as male and female depending on what region. But there's even like using the hook to throw kids into his bag that he's then taking back to the underworld,
right.
and like that sort of stuff,
right.
But it is an Eastern European / German and Austrian tradition that's actually still celebrated today on
mm-hmm.
December 5th.
Mm-hmm.
It's Krampusnacht.
Yes, I had that written down in here. I guess did you hear that like they there are still young men to this day that they get super drunk and they dress up as Krampus and they like run through the streets and cause like terror and havoc to all the little kids.
Yeah.
Which I found to be kind of fun.
Yeah, like what what better way to celebrate the holidays than to scare the shit out of kids?
Scare them into submission.
Yeah.
Fear is the best tactic.
And that's German culture.
Yeah, it definitely is.
As somebody who comes from a German family, that's German culture.
That's it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, scare you into submission, beat you with birch branches, and make sure that you fear opposition.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. I think that's the Trinity. That's the Holy Trinity, as they call it.
Yeah, it is. And it doesn't leave any lasting trauma.
At all. No. Come on now. You're tough. It was to toughen you up.
Yeah.
So do you want to get into scariest scenes?
Let me see if there's anything that I wanted to point out beforehand. Well, yeah, Toni Collette. Legend, icon, horror goddess, and main star of one of the best TV shows to ever exist, United States of Terror.
Oh, I did not watch that.
Oh my God, it's so good. Mm. Toni Collette plays one character who is really like 10 characters.
Oh, I see.
And so good.
Okay.
So good.
Okay, okay.
But I guess before we get into like favorite and scariest scenes, I kind of want to go over some of the themes that are covered throughout Krampus.
Absolutely.
So there's one of the kind of big overarching things is just kind of like the loss of the holiday spirit and how it's become so consumer based. That's really shown in the opening scene with the trampling of like the Black Friday sale, and the greed has kind of taken over.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start to see it in the family as well, where Omi, yeah, they refer to her as Omi. She is like in there making cookies and getting everything together for the holiday. And then Adam Scott's character,
Tom.
Oh, see, I had them written on the second page.
That's okay.
So Tom comes in and he's like, don't work too hard. We also like bought some cookies at the store.
I'm really glad that you brought that up because I also picked up on that too, right?
Yeah.
Where you're like, you're diminishing those family traditions.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. It's just turning it into like, we're just spending a bunch of money and then pretending like we like one another
exactly,
for a day.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And so like, that's kind of one of the overarching themes. Another one of them is we've just lost Christmas. It's the food that she cooks is like not on theme. The way that they're celebrating is not on theme. The decor really isn't even on theme. The family that's coming to visit them says multiple times like, oh, we should have gone somewhere else.
Yeah.
And like they're talking about how they don't even really want to be together.
Yep.
It's
they're
just
literally
they feel
doing
the
it.
Obligation.
Yeah, they're doing it out of obligation.
And that is honestly like that's hitting home.
It's a vibe, right?
Yeah,
it's a fucking vibe.
Like I don't spend the holidays with my family anymore. I haven't in a really long time.
No.
But I remember the last few of them. I'm like, none of us even like one another.
Right. We're all like here.
Yeah.
For 3 hours. And I know there most people are listening, but right now I'm looking at the screen on my phone.
Yeah.
And like I can't fucking stand this whenever I go somewhere and I sit down and like people immediately pull their phones out. And I'm like, what the fuck am I sitting here for?
Yeah.
Like we could have done this at home. Like
yeah. We're all sitting there on our phones trying to dissociate away from grandpa spewing out some racist bullshit.
Right.
And it's just like, okay, let's just get through this.
Yep.
Why do we have to do that?
It.
Why do we even have to pretend? Like, in my mind, I'd rather completely remove myself from the situation and have a good time.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's 100%. I mean, I don't know. This is probably going to be the first year that I completely back out of holidays for my family and starting to love them from a distance and maintain my boundaries because it's just become too toxic for me to really want to be around any longer. So I get it. And I truly feel like the advice that I would have for other people is that your happiness is not worth it. Like
no.
the like lack of happiness and stress that you will feel by going and like playing pretend for even like, even if it's just an hour, I feel like is just so disrespectful for everybody's time. You would just be better off just fucking canceling and saying, I'm not going. Like, I'm going to go put my energy where I want to be, where I feel comfortable being. And I'll be happier for it. Like,
exactly.
Just do you, boo.
Yeah.
Be happy.
Like, let me tell you from experience, the first like 3 years, your family's going to ask whoever your closest relative is, where are they?
My God.
Yeah. And
haven't shown up yet.
after like 4 years, they're not going to say shit about it anymore. And you don't owe shit to anybody because you share blood with them.
Yeah, that's just true.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I don't associate with any of those people ever.
No.
It's only for those like two events, right? I used to go to a lot more of them, but now it's like just those two of them.
Yeah.
And this last year, I didn't go to one of them and got a bunch of shit for it. And so now it's like, why even bother to go to the second one?
Yeah.
It just seems like kind of a waste of my time.
You already know what the repercussions are going to be. You already went through it.
We already did it. Yeah. And just, so it just, I agree with you. It's one of those things where like, yes, you might worry about the disappointment that you're going to get or that people are going to feel because of your actions. And I even had like somebody tell me today that like other people are going to miss me at this event and it isn't necessarily fair of me to not go because of one person. Right. Or two people or however many it is. But I'm still thinking in my brain of like, but does that still mean that I get to sacrifice my comfort to go do this thing? Right. Like, that's just kind of how I feel about it.
It's also like, how many of those people are reaching out to me to check in and like see how things are going on a regular basis anyway?
100%.
Yeah.
Like, it's a two-way street. I could reach out to them, but they could also reach. They also have my phone number.
Yeah. Phone rings both ways.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. The only other thing that I wanted to shout out before getting into favorite scenes was a couple of quotes.
We're going to do quotes now.
Yeah.
One
of my favorite ones was to believe in Santa is to believe in the spirit of the holiday, also to believe in sacrifice. And Omi said that like shortly before things started to progress into a little bit more of a horror realm instead of a family oriented holiday movie realm. And then there was, the other one is actually in my favorite scene. So I'm not going to say that one quite yet. But I also wanted to shout out the absolutely horrendous noise of the family showing up and like the house shaking and you can hear the vehicle outside. I connected with that a lot because I'm like, I have a lot of redneck family that drive lifted Toyota pickups that are really loud. They have the mufflers sawn off every vehicle that they own.
Yep.
And just that like dread that you feel when you hear the vehicle coming up where you're like, all right,
here we
that's
go.
Them.
Yep.
Yeah.
Put on your brave big boy smile and go downstairs.
Yep. It's happening.
Right. I also, I'll say my favorite quotes real quick. I don't think any of them were in either of my scenes. One of them that I really appreciated was also from Omi, and it was when Max was translating for Jordan and Stevie. They told her, like, Jordan and Stevie were like, what if we're really good all year, and what if we do this, and what if we do that? And Omi says, it's not about the things that you do. It's about the feeling in your heart and what you're willing to give up. I think that's how she says it because I'm heavily paraphrasing it. But I just liked that. It doesn't, like, when you write your letter to Santa every year, as I remember doing as a little kid, you were always, like, you were trying to prove to Santa that you had been good all year. And so you deserve to get a reward for being good all year. And Omi's point was that it doesn't matter the things that you do. It matters, like, what you feel, how you interact with the world with like that belief and that magic and how like you sacrifice certain things to make other people happy. Like that's what like the spirit of Christmas is.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like that's something that branches out far beyond the spirit of Christmas where it's like people do a lot of performative things and think that that is what signifies that they're a good person.
Right.
And it's not actually the kindness in their heart. And I saw a post recently, and of course this was in the response to political things that are happening right now, where somebody was like, I am a kind person and I will continue to be kind, but I'm done being nice.
Yeah. There's a difference.
There is a difference. And that's something that in this movie, I feel like gets highlighted a lot, where it's like, these are people that are like, outwardly, if you were to take away the tone, the words that they're saying can be very nice, they can be very pleasant, but there's not kindness.
Yeah, they're empty. They're there's other things that are associated with them.
The only other quote that I had written down was the very first time that they start they start hearing things on the roof and they're like, it's probably just
squirrels. In this weather.
Yeah. There's squirrels that sound like they're 400 pounds.
Right?
Yeah.
And when it lands, like a big ka-thud, and Sarah's just like, see, just squirrels.
Yeah, just squirrels.
So I will, because we're getting into the lighter side of things, I have two other quotes that I thought would be really funny to highlight. The first is Max in the snowplow towards the end. And he says, I don't even know how to drive a stick shift. We have a hybrid. And then my other one that I thought was good and I needed to include in here was when Linda and Howard are talking. And Howard says, Linda, baby, what's up there? And she says, honey, you wouldn't believe me if I told you. And he says, baby, I just got my ass kicked by a bunch of Christmas cookies. I think I can handle it.
Oh, it's so good. I'm shocked that you haven't seen this before. And I'm also so excited about this because it is such a good movie. It's a
great movie.
One of three Christmas movies that I watch every year.
I feel like, well, I did actually put this in my rating that it is a new holiday classic. Like, I will have to watch it every year now around this time.
My three every year are Krampus, Elf, and Year Without a Santa Claus.
You had me at Elf and Krampus. But my third is Home Alone.
Which is
kind of like Krampus, but, you know.
Yeah, just without the demon.
But, you know, also has that one guy in it. Not Macaulay Culkin, but the guy who plays Harry.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
It's not Joe Pesci, is it?
No.
Is it?
Is it?
I don't fucking know. Why am I getting so off topic?
I feel
right
like
now?
He's an actor that's like just before our time.
Well, I love Joe Pesci in, I'm pretty sure it is, because I love him in My Cousin Vinny. Like, My Cousin Vinny's like one of my favorite movies.
I don't think I've ever watched that.
Oh, God. He is in Home Alone. He's we should watch My Cousin Vinny sometime. It's fucking good. Like, there's a day, one of these days, I want to dress up like Lisa from My Cousin Vinny, because she dresses in this fucking floral jumpsuit, and it's gorgeous. I will find a photo for you.
What a coincidence, because one day I want to dress up like Lydia from Beetlejuice.
In the big red dress?
Yeah.
You're like, yeah.
Yeah.
We can make that happen. That could be actually really funny.
I feel like that'd be more flattering. Red does kind of make me look really weird sometimes. But I feel like that dress would be more flattering on me than like Beetlejuice's outfit. Nobody looks good in stripes. Yeah, vertical stripes.
Look at this.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. She just eats it.
Oh, yeah.
Nick. She's so pretty.
So let's get into favorites and scariest.
Okay.
What's your favorite?
Ooh, so my favorite scene, I do have some call-outs. But I will give you my first one. So my favorite scene was Omi's story about her original wish to Krampus.
It was so beautiful.
I loved the animation style. I love just like the way the scene changes and it just goes into this little like narrative that she gives. I thought it was just so cool from start to finish. And I liked how it was like watching a Christmas carol. Like, I don't know. Like, it was just really, it was a nice little transition, told the story really well, gave you like a little bit like of history on Krampus while also like instilling this like things to come. Like, things are just going to get worse from here.
Yeah.
Kind of. And even like foreshadowing. It almost kind of lays out for you what's going to happen even.
Yeah.
So I liked it a lot. That was definitely my favorite.
That, I had that in honorable mentions. Because I was like, the art in that scene alone is so good.
It's just pretty. Yeah. And yeah. I really liked the premise, you know, just in terms of like Omi living in Austria.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know what time period. I can't possibly guess, but it was during what I would assume is either like during the war or post-war, when like even food was scarce.
Yeah.
And so for whatever reason, like Omi had to go to the square to like get their loaf of bread, but everybody was so hungry that they just like tore it out of her hands, and so she only had like a little bit left to like take home to her parents. And even her parents were so angry that they like ripped her doll, her like Santa doll. And so at that point she was just like, okay, there's no hope left, like I can't believe in anything anymore. And so she made the same wish that her grandson Max did, which was, I just want them to all go away.
Yeah.
And I really liked the the scene from her bedroom door where she's in bed and she was just talking about how, like, you know, Krampus came with his minions and I watched him drag my family one by one into the underworld. And then that scene where she's standing in front of the fireplace that, like, you can see is, like, descends into a portal into hell. Yeah. And then just the little bell just, like, pops out and lands in front of her. I tried really hard to figure out. There are, like, 4 or 5 pagan runes that are on the bottom of the bell, but I couldn't decipher what any of them were.
Yeah, they're also on the forehead of a lot of the minions.
Yeah, I noticed that, too. Yeah, I should have written some of those down, but...
Yeah, there's also the callback to just kind of standard pagan ritual behavior anyway, where it's like she takes the sentimental ripped object and just throwing that in the fire as, like, here's the intention, here's the sacrifice.
Right.
Yeah.
And isn't that interesting how, like, it can be as simple as that?
Yeah.
It can be it's intention and, like, sacrifice. And, like, that's a ritual by itself.
Germanic paganism doesn't fuck around.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to, like, spill your blood or say, like, abracadabra. Like, mm-mm. It can just be the intention and the, like, act that you're performing.
All it takes is some really strong eyebrows and some good focus.
And then alchemy ensues. Yeah. It's interesting. My, just to give my call outs before you get to your favorite scene, is I really liked Linda's Mama Bear moment where she is slowly losing this fight to this, like, toy Freddy Fazbear that's, like, attacking her on the ground until she notices that one of her children is nearby and, like, incapacitated. And then she just kind of, like, okay, no. And she gets up, she, you know, stabs the bear, she grabs the axe, cuts, you know, Toni Collette's Sarah down, and then, you know, goes and gets her daughter, right? It's just like a nope, not doing this anymore, like, going into overdrive. I thought that was pretty cool. I really liked Dorothy's shotgun surprise towards the end when, like, nobody could, like, Howard kept getting, like, incapacitated when he had the shotgun and nobody was getting anything done, and so Dorothy just picked it up and just, like, went to town. Just, she killed the little angel thing. I'm pretty sure she killed the jack-in-the-box thing. No, that was the last thing she was pointing at.
Yeah.
So she killed something else before the angel thing, but I don't remember what it was. But I thought that was really cool. And then I really liked the this is a really silly, like, small nod, but, like, Tom's clear communication with Max. There was a couple of times in the movie where, like, chaos would ensue. For instance, in this scene I'm going to talk about, there's, like, a crisis and, like, a fire happens. And Tom's preoccupied, so he can't go get the fire. And so he turns around and he looks at Max and he's like, Max, get the fire extinguisher. And it's great because that's what you do in a crisis, because everybody around you, they go into bystander mode.
Yep.
Where they, like, they freeze and they don't know what to do. And so just that ability of just be like, you go do something right now, because, like, you're fully capable of doing it. You just need somebody to tell you.
It's literally what they teach you in CPR class.
Yeah.
You point at somebody and say, you call 911.
Yeah.
And then, like, you start come help doing me, what you need
right?
to do. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And he did it twice. He did it that time. And then there's a second time when he needed to reload his shotgun. And he was like, Max, go get the bullets. Right. It was just, like, very clear, very concise information. Go help me out because I can't do this. And I thought it was a cool nod to have in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also just calling back to Dorothy picking up the shotgun and absolutely just annihilating when Sarah picks up the revolver and just, like, pops that little animated mechanic thing.
Yeah.
And then Tom just kind of looks at her like, what the fuck? And it's like, well, she is related to those rednecks.
Exactly. Yeah. Although it seemed like Linda got the redneck from Howard. But maybe she always had a little redneck in there. Yeah, I was almost hoping at one point that Linda was going to take the revolver because that was her gun.
Yeah.
And, like, fucking, like, just pea shoot, you know, just like the gingerbread cookies or whatever. But
yeah, but no.
But, you know, whatever. It had some good moments.
It did.
So which was, what was your favorite scene?
So I'll start with my absolute favorite one.
Absolute favorite.
And that is the one that has the cult. It's just after Omi finishes telling her story. I believe. And she says something in German, and I always watch things with subtitles because, like, I can't hear for shit. So I even in the subtitles for this point, it said just like speaking German.
Yep.
And then Max doesn't translate, like nobody translates
understand.
For her.
Mm-hmm.
And Dorothy is like, she says we're fucked.
Mm-hmm.
And then Max is like, how do you know what she's saying? And then Dorothy says, because I'm old enough to know when life's coming at you with his pants down.
Mm-hmm.
That is like my favorite scene, because it's just like, it doesn't matter what language you're speaking. It doesn't matter who you're around, what you're doing. When you're fucked, you know you're fucked.
You know you're fucked. Yeah. Yeah. And I liked how, you know, she said it. She says we're fucked. And Grandma goes,
yeah,
good enough.
She's just like,
You know what? Not far off. Yeah. I was trying to find a way to sugarcoat it for the kids, but yeah.
Yeah. Nope. We're fucked.
No, you're right.
Yeah. Also, while we're on the topic of Grandma, is it just me, or does Omi look like one of those women who, like, in her day was banging?
Banging.
Yeah.
Grandma's, Omi's still banging.
Yeah, she's still hot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let me see. There was a couple other, like, honorable mentions. There's a, this scene when Tom first picks up, Beth's gun, and he's like,
oh, Linda's gun.
Or, yeah, yeah. Linda's gun. And he's holding it like like it's like a full dog bag. And he's just like,
he's like, oh, it's kind of heavy.
Yeah, he's like, it's kind of heavy.
And Howard's like, yeah, that's Linda's.
Yeah, he's like, oh yeah, that's Linda's. And he has this shotgun in his hand. That was a good one.
I like the roll up on the side. I think it was the side of his Hummer that just like, yeah, had the gun cases and then all the ammo. I was like, damn, dude, that's like a special Trump supporter if I've ever seen one.
For real. Also, the scene where Howard is being dragged by the Alaskan bollworm or whatever it is that's in the snow at that point.
Oh, yeah.
Right before Tom shoots at whatever it is. I just thought that was a really well done scene. Like, you don't see any skips in the effects for any of that. It actually looks really good.
Yeah, it does look really good. Because I think they tried to be as practical as possible.
I think they did.
And
yeah.
I did like that moment too, because there is a great moment there where Howard has been pulled into the snow fairly significantly at this point. Like, he's like almost up to his shoulders and he's asking Tom for help, and Tom like tries to pull him out but then can't. And so he backs up and he pulls the revolver out, and Howard has this moment where he's like, Tom, right? Like, are you seriously going to shoot me right now? And Tom just starts shooting the ground, right? And like actually does damage to this thing, and it ends up like fucking off and taking off. And I just remember thinking to myself, I was like, damn, that was some smart thinking.
It was. Because
you're not trying to kill it. You're just trying to get it to stop doing what it's doing. Because I'm even thinking to myself, I'm like, how far would those bullets actually penetrate the ground? How close was that thing underneath the ground that it would have actually done any kind of damage to it?
Yeah, because if it's pulling, like it looks like it's pulling him vertically straight down.
Yeah.
So it's got to be pretty far.
It's
got to
be pretty far.
There.
Because even when it pulled, like, oh, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, if we're imagining that, like, it's a blanket of snow, right, on top of the ground. Because you think, like, when they were walking through the snow, it was, like, almost up to their knees. And then this thing comes by and it grabs him, but it doesn't really pull him down much further until it gets him to like a bank.
Oh, that's true.
And then it almost seemed like when it pulled him underground, it wasn't pulling him into ground, into earth. It was pulling him through snow, because you could hear him like screaming muffled, like, get me out of here, right?
Yeah.
Like, so I almost think that like because there was a blizzard, there was this huge snow drift.
Yeah.
And so this thing is coming through the snow drift, because I'm thinking it's like a Jack in the Box, right? So maybe it's not that heavy. And so maybe he was actually doing damage to it by shooting at it, because it's not earth that he's shooting into, it's just blankets of snow.
True.
Which is just so much, has so much more air in it if you think about it.
We might have to just go shoot snow
just to verify.
Yeah, just to figure it out.
Because I was like, I was thinking to myself when we were literally just talking about it, about like that Mythbusters episode where they like shoot into water and they're like, would this actually work in MI3 when whoever is like swimming underwater and they're shooting bullets at him?
Yeah.
And I believe, I don't remember the episode, but that when you do shoot in through water, it does go through the water, but like its velocity completely stops.
Yeah.
So it like can't really do a lot of damage to you unless you're right at the top of the water.
Yeah. Yeah, because I remember them even doing the comparison between water and, like, the ballistics gel, and then also putting the ballistics gel under the water and seeing how far it would even go in.
Right.
And it, like, it wasn't that far.
Yeah, it was very interesting. It was a very interesting episode. But anyways.
I think my last honorable mention really isn't, like, a scene in general. It's kind of throughout the film.
Yeah.
Just the effect that they did for all of the snow and just the wintering of everything through this blizzard was beautiful.
It was really nice.
It was so pretty. Like the really dramatic icicles that are hanging from the houses mm-hmm. and the trees being totally blown over, but like pure white. It was just a very beautifully done scene.
It was a good set. It was a really, really good set. So what about your scariest scene?
I wrote down for my scariest the entirety of the attic scene with the jester, the bear, the weird fucking baby angel cherub thing that was honestly terrifying.
I almost thought to myself, because I don't know too much of the mythology for, you know, Austrian or Germanic like mythology, but that almost seemed like it was supposed to be a very specific creature. Like a griffin. Like it had like griffin claws and like big bird wings and like a baby doll face. So I'm like kind of curious if it was meant to be something specific.
I should look into that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was scary.
Yeah.
It did the thing. I think out of all of the creatures that you see throughout the movie, it might be the scariest to me. It's between them and when you very first see the elves, because the elves' masks when you very first see them are striking.
They're fucking striking. Yeah. Yeah.
What's your scariest?
So my scariest scene was, it was hard for me to pick, right? Cause this is a very like kind of family friendly scary movie. So I really tried to think about like, if I was watching this as a child that was like Max's age, like what would have scared me like the most?
Yeah.
And for me, it was the scene where Howard Jr. gets taken by the hook.
Oh,
in the
yeah.
middle of the night. And the reason why I would consider it my scariest scene is because like everybody's passed out. They've gone to sleep. It's really late at night. And I wanted to talk to you at some point about the rules of Christmas, mm-hmm. right? Because early on in the movie, several times, like Omi is making like a priority out of like keeping the fire hot,
yeah,
drinking hot cocoa, singing Christmas carols, like going through all of these like traditions in her brain. But like in my brain, I'm thinking rules like,
yeah.
to live by. Because when the family's all passed out, right? It's really cold. The fire goes out. And then right before the fire goes out, their Christmas carols turn off because they've been listening to them on the iPad and the iPad dies. And it's right after that that you start to hear the laughter and like the cackling from upstairs. And I don't know if like the laughter and the cackling was there all along and you just couldn't hear it until the sound was off. But it was almost like a cue. It was like, ooh, it's our time. Let's go. And my favorite part of that scene, the part that like really kind of like made me get like a shiver down my spine, is when you see the hook and it's coming down and you see all the bells and everything, you see the cookie, right? And it lands at the bottom. And then it just like, it looks like someone's like jingled it a little bit and it just goes, ah! right? Just like, fucking pay attention to me, right?
Yeah.
And that part to me got me really good because I remember thinking to myself, like, I was thinking about this from like a rated R horror movie perspective. And I'm like, oh, fuck, we're going to go into this territory. Uh-huh. Right. And so it became very quickly like a fairly not funny scene, maybe campy, because, you know, like Howard Jr. gets up. He walks over. He's enticed by the cookie. He grabs it. He takes a bite out of it. And the gingerbread cookie wakes up and just like immediately turns into this like, ha ha, gotcha. And he just like wraps the kid up in the chain and then pulls on it like, pull me up. And they just like they start pulling him up. And this is the part that kind of got me too, is that, you know, the rest of the family wakes up, they're like, oh my god, and fucking Sarah goes in and she grabs Howie's legs and she also goes halfway up the chimney.
Yeah.
And then now they're playing like this tug of war with them, right? And the fire, even though it's gone out, it's like still burning logs on the ground. So I'm thinking about like Sarah's character.
Yeah.
She's trying to save her nephew. Her nephew's being dragged up this chimney. She can't see what's going on. Her back is probably burning. I'm surprised her hair didn't catch fire. This is a family movie, right? But like, I'm thinking about all these things. And then when she sees the gingerbread man like come down and like make a face at her, like the terror and the horror on her face after everything happens and Howie gets taken up and the shoe falls down and you just see her face.
Yeah.
And just like that in itself was like, that was the scariest moment for me.
I would say that scene is probably one of the most just like outwardly frightening.
Yeah.
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 Because you can see the terror in her eyes. You can, that inference of like, what's going to happen with this hook?
Yeah.
Like, where is this going?
Yeah.
Whose butthole is this hook for?
Yes. Basically.
Yeah.
Or whose jaws are going to get stuck in and they're going to, you know, like I definitely went that like very horror-esque.
Yeah.
And so for it to like have a bit of lightheartedness with this like, oh, we're just going to wrap this kid up and take him up the chimney.
And the honestly kind of cute gingerbread men.
Yeah. That, they are kind of cute, even though they're horrifying, right? But they have like a bit of a cutesy, funny, like humor to them.
Yeah.
But then like, you have the, like, it was just, it was such a good scene because it really like just the panic, this ensuing panic, everybody's trying to like jump in and save Howie. And then for him to just still get taken up the chimney.
Yeah.
Right? And then you just get that kind of bit of despair. And it, I found it interesting in hindsight, this is probably just because it's a bit more of a family friendly movie, but just how kind of like detached Linda and Howard were when each of their kids got taken. It was just like kid after kid after kid. And they were like, oh my God, but don't go out there because like we have other kids to protect. It's like
we still got a fresh one.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of going back to the like rules of Christmas too. The only thing that I can think of with why Omi was so insistent upon like keep the carols going, keep the hot chocolate,
keep
the
fire,
like that sort of thing. What I'm thinking is these all tie back to the pagan roots of Christmas prior to Christianity adopting it and then it turning into
and bastardizing
honestly now
it.
Just kind of like a consumerist thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is like it ties back to like the Yule log, which was something that you burned throughout the holiday to try to promote holiday spirit. Kind of the same thing with the Christmas carols was they were songs, but they were also like ritualistic chants initially in paganism.
Oh.
Where it was like this is bringing in the spirit of the holiday.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure about the hot chocolate.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
that's kind of what I can think of is it's supposed to be like the pagan roots of bringing in holiday spirit.
That's so interesting because I saw it, I like that take on it. I really saw it as like a this is the way that we keep the bad spirits away.
Yeah.
We keep the fire hot so they can't come down the chimney and attack us. We sing Christmas carols to like not just promote the Christmas spirit, but to like almost drive them, like maybe it physically hurts them to be around Christmas cheer. So like kind of like providing shields and barriers to what's going on outside. But I was also seeing like from a lot of my breakdowns from Krampus is that he like it likes to play with his food.
Yeah.
For him, it's a lot about like he could break down your door at any time and kill you, but that's not why he's doing it. He's he's doing it to teach you a lesson. And so he's like kind of toying with like his victims.
And I think those things can work simultaneously because I think he embodies when the Christmas spirit is gone. And so these are like the ritualistic things to keep the spirit happening.
Right.
But also that those can be protective mechanisms as well.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious. I wonder if he almost like he waited for those things to be gone before like attacking just to almost like prove a point.
Yeah.
Right? That like I'm not going to come in and like wreak havoc until the Christmas spirit literally isn't there anymore.
And honestly, if I would have given myself a little bit more time, I would have gone more into like the literature of it.
Yeah,
and actually
right.
like read up more about it.
Same, right.
But yeah, it to me, I think we're both on the right track with
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I did bring it up for rules because this is trivia, but you know what else this guy's directed, right?
No.
He is also the director of Trick or Treat.
Oh, that totally makes sense.
Right?
That makes a lot
so
of sense.
That's what I'm saying. It's like in Trick or Treat, there were very hard rules. And like if you didn't follow the rules, that gave Sam a reason to come after you and kill you.
Yeah.
And in Krampus, it's different. It's like there are rules, but they're more guidelines.
Yeah.
Like if I'm taking a page out of Pirates of the Caribbean, it's like these are things that like we look for when we're looking for victims. And if we don't see these things being checked off, then we're going after them.
Mm-hmm.
But it almost seemed to me like because we were talking earlier about how Krampus isn't a person, he's like a flavor of demon.
Yeah.
And for this family specifically, it was like Max summoned this demon only to terrorize his family.
Yeah.
I kind of give credence to that, but then I kind of am wondering why were there other people that were affected, mm-hmm. right? Because, like, there was, like, the DHL, like, package delivery guy that died. And then I'm pretty sure we didn't see bodies, but, like, I'm pretty sure Beth's boyfriend died, too, and his family.
Yeah.
So unless they summoned their...
snowplow guy.
And then snowplow guy. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there's that's at least three, and then presumably, like, the boyfriend's family. But so I'm wondering to myself, I'm like, so was that demon only supposed to hunt this family and the surrounding victims, or did, like, Beth's boyfriend's family invite their own version of Krampus, like their own demon, yeah. flavor demon to, like, terrorize them?
Because then there's also such a direct connection to Omi, mm-hmm. where it's like, could this have only come about because it was her bloodline?
Yeah, I'm kind of curious. Yeah. Would it be the same Krampus that came both times?
Yeah. Also, well traveled.
No kidding.
But also, with that tongue, he's getting around.
Yeah. Wait, did you say your scariest scene?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I did, at least. It was the attic scene.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And I would say for honorable mentions for the scariest scene, Family Holidays.
Yeah.
Scary as fuck.
Yeah.
Also, the elves invasion.
Yeah.
That was pretty good and, like, pretty scary.
And the kind of, like, Lovecraftian jester situation, yeah. Yeah. with, like, the mouth.
That reminded me a lot of It, honestly. Yeah. Like, that same version. And also, to that point, it's backing up a little bit, but it's right after Howie is taken. And Howard freaks out and he goes, I'm fucking going out there, right? I'm leaving. And he points the shotgun at Tom and he's like, you can't stop me. And he unbarricades the door and he opens it up, and their whole yard is just filled with snowmen.
Oh,
which
my God.
Did you think to yourself, like, each snowman is a different person?
Kind of, yeah.
Right? Because they kind of, like, focus in on that smaller one that you're assuming is Howie, right? Mm-hmm. But anyways, the reason why I really like that scene and that it is kind of creepy is they're looking out and they're like, oh my God, there's all these. And then you see the elves and they're, like, darting in between the snowmen, right?
Yeah.
And they're cackling and laughing. It's like, it's a game to them. They're having fun right now.
And I think at one point, even Krampus is, like, standing there and then he just kind of disappears.
Yeah, he just kind of, like, just vanishes. And that's when Sarah's like, close the fucking, get back inside. She goes outside. You see her just, like, shoving everybody back in.
Yeah.
And I wanted her in that moment, even though it's a PG-13 movie, to just be like, don't open the fucking door.
For real. It's so hard going back and watching this now, because now I've seen her in Hereditary.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, she'll take the reins.
She will.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
she
yeah.
is their mother. Yeah.
Your mother. So do you want to get into trivia?
Yeah. I have a trivia. So my one trivia.
Uno trivia.
Is that the name Krampus comes from the German word Krampen, which
yeah.
is claw.
Yep. Yep. That
yeah.
is. Yep.
Yep.
That's a good one.
Which is portrayed in a few different ways. Like, there's the cloven hooves of him being mm-hmm. a half goat. There is the cunty little hook that comes down the...
with the gingerbread
the
and the
chimney
bells.
With the gingerbread and the bells.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also just that, like, he has... he's got
hella.
Some talons.
Yeah, he has hella nails.
Yeah.
For days.
Yeah, he's got a full set.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know how he's wiping, but, you know.
Yeah, like, Drew off wallow length.
Yeah.
Nails.
Oh, you had mentioned Krampusnacht.
Yeah.
Is on the eve of December 5th.
Yeah.
And typically, like, they celebrate Krampus Day, like, Christmas Day on December 6th.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one that I had. The director, Michael Dougherty, he calls Krampus Santa Claus's shadow. That's how he
Ooh.
Refers to Krampus in this movie and, like, what his, like, vibe is supposed to be. I thought it was also funny that the noodle incident that's referred to in the movie, when, you know, the dad's like, oh, I'll just go across the street and see if the neighbors have power. And she's like, you can't, they're in Hawaii. And then those people are in Florida. And those people haven't talked to us since Max's noodle incident. And Tom's like, Max's noodle incident? And Max just, like, you know, laughs and, like, they don't address it again. That's actually a nod to Calvin and Hobbes. Because there are several comic strips where there's, like, a noodle incident that's, like, talked about, but, like, they don't. They talk about it like it's Calvin's noodle incident, but they don't give any details about
Interesting.
It. So I thought that was really fun. Krampus actually wears a mask there's a lot of people who were wondering, like, what the fuck is wrong with that dude's face?
Mm-hmm.
And it's because it's not his face. He's wearing a mask.
Yeah.
And so the only things that you see underneath the mask are his eyes. And I think you can see his mouth a little bit. But I thought that was really cool because the first time I watched it, I was like, why did they have his face look like this? Like, they could have done so many other things with this.
Yeah, because you see also kind of like levels of rolls of skin, and then it's very animal eyes.
Yeah, that are very goat eyes. Yeah. Yeah, those eyes are goat all the way. I also thought this was kind of cool. The composer for this movie, he blended Christmas carols,
mm-hmm.
And he called it a little bit of pagan in there. So he threw, mm-hmm. he used bells, bones, chanting, animal skins, and like vocal choruses that he interwove into the Christmas carols for like the soundtrack to this movie.
Oh, that's so good.
So it's like haunting and like
yeah.
creepy, and but like also like very grounded in terms of like using like physical objects that aren't necessarily instruments,
mm-hmm.
like bones and animal skins and things like that. Although like drums are typically covered in animal skin. There is an Easter egg for there. Sam's lollipop is in this movie.
Oh,
from Trick or Treat.
Yeah.
I think it's in one of the bags, I think. Yeah. Or it's like a candy that Max offers to his cousins at one point, because he's sharing like his Halloween candy with them, and like Sam's lollipop is in his candy. So I thought that was kind of cool. I also, so this is the Easter egg that I was telling you about earlier, or the trivia I was telling you about earlier. When Aunt Dorothy is showing the kids how to make spiked hot chocolate.
Yeah.
And Howie looks at her and she goes, fine. And she gives it to him and he takes a sip of it. That scene all by itself almost got the movie an R rating.
That makes sense.
And the director was like, we can feed kids to killer Jack in the Boxes. And it's a PG-13 rating. But I give them a drop of alcohol and now I have to contest the MPAA for a PG-13 rating.
Yeah. And also like mouths that open horizontally and vertically.
And like swallow
and
kids whole.
Swallow whole kids. But we can't have them take a sip of... of hot chocolate that has schnapps in it.
Right. Like a little dribble. It's not like they're shooting something.
Like, it's got as much alcohol as a kombucha, and that's the problem.
When I was that kid's age, I was drinking Dirty Girl Scouts with my uncles. So, like,
yeah.
Shit or get off the pot, bitch.
I had been full drunk.
Yeah. At that age. Like, come on. Now having just like a little sip of somebody's eggnog. Like, come on.
Yeah.
But I found that really funny.
That is hilarious.
I just liked his, like, you know, we can definitely get like little kids to be eaten on you know, in this movie and be totally fine with my PG-13 rating. But God forbid I let somebody take a sip of what they think is a spiked drink.
For real. Also, you're not going to have Conchata in a film and not have her try to like corrupt the kid.
That
in
was
some
like
way.
Seriously one of my favorite lines when she comes in and she's like, you know, your sister's no Mother Teresa, but at least she stops by every once in a while to make sure I'm not dead. And she's just like, where's the nog, I need to get Mary.
Yeah.
It's just like, dude, that's a vibe.
She's
such
so
a
good
vibe.
She's the only family member out of all of them that I would have invited.
Yeah, right. Even if she was insufferable.
For real.
So that was all of my trivia. That was my quote. I think all I have is my rating and then the budget. Just real quick, I'm going to go into the budget real fast because this is kind of interesting. So their budget was an estimated $15 million back in 2015.
Wow.
Which is quite a bit. But their opening weekend on 12/4/2015, they made $16
million. Sick.
Just over $16 million, actually. So they made over. They made their budget in just like the first weekend.
Yeah,
which is pretty. That's pretty impressive.
That's good.
So it's not too bad, right? And then their gross was $42 million in U.S. and Canada, and then worldwide was $61 million.
Damn.
And I think that I don't remember when that census specifically was taken, but I found that to be very interesting.
For two reasons: a Christmas movie making that much money, and a horror movie making that much money that isn't tied into like an already created franchise.
Absolutely.
Or anything like that. That's big.
For it to make money on that first weekend is like monumental. And I don't know how much of that was like Michael's previous movies like having success and people being like, oh, you got to go watch, like, you know, that one's going to be good.
Yeah. Or if it's cast, because like that's also
true,
like coming off of like Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
Where Adam Scott had a little bit more of like a bigger role.
Right.
It's when Toni Collette was starting to get popular, but she wasn't really like
she wasn't
super
like the
popular
A-list.
Yet.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And then also not to understate David Koechner, because he's actually like he's in a lot of good shit and he's actually a very well-known actor. But that could have been part of it, too, was just like this director has a lot of really good movies that are out. And then also like that's a pretty stacked cast.
It's a pretty stacked cast
for a family horror movie.
And that's what I'm thinking, too, because yeah. I'm thinking like if you think about the time frame, you want everybody to get to the movie theaters. So you spin it as this like family fun, like horror movie. And so I can see like that in itself, even if it wasn't necessarily like a good movie, like getting a lot of people coming in to see it just specifically for what type of audience it was geared towards.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. I mean, honestly, a horror movie making money.
Yeah.
In general.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Cause like we cover a lot of the like more popular ones mm-hmm. so far.
We
you
have.
Know?
Yeah.
And we're going to go into a lot of the more like niche cult following films. But a lot of those like niche cult following films don't make money.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they don't. Like they are passion projects for a reason, or they like, you know, they spawn entire franchises, but it takes a minute to actually do so.
Yeah.
Not everything is like, you know, Saw.
Should we get into ratings?
I think we should. I just briefly wanted to read through my list of murder items because I made a list.
I love that because I don't think the murder item that I chose will be on your list.
Ooh.
And I think it's because it's not an item.
Well, let's see. Okay, so, I do have a question for you. Do you think the Jack in the Box was the same monster throughout the film? Because...
Kind of, yeah.
Beth got eaten by a tiny Jack in the Box. This teeny tiny one. So, like, did it get bigger as it consumed more and more kids? Because then after it killed Beth, it attacked Tom and Howard. Because I'm assuming it's also the one that, like... travels under the ground
mm-hmm.
and then after that it somehow got into the house and it was in the attic and that's where it ate Jordan mm-hmm. and you know eventually landed back downstairs after killing Rosie and got strapped to the sleigh and then taken out the window with the elves.
Yeah.
So the reason why I asked that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like kind of feel like it's the same monster. So then that kind of takes off some of the monsters on my list. Because I wrote this as I was watching it. So like I didn't know how many monsters there would be in totality. So I wrote Mini Jack in the Box, Beth. Mole Rat Krampus, which is also the Mini Jack in the Box. So
Mole Rat Krampus.
Yeah. Eight, Tom, Sarah, and then Linda. Was eaten by Mole Rat Krampus. There's the gingerbread meat hook.
Mm-hmm.
That's Howie. There's the gingerbread men, which is also like the gingerbread meat hook dudes. There's the monster Jack in the Box, which is also the mini Jack in the Box and the Mole Rat Krampus. that gets Jordan. And then there's the killer Freddy Fazbear Bear. there's the killer Bionicle. There's the elves that get Dorothy and Chrissy. There's Krampus's bag, which gets Omi, and the angel doll, which gets nobody. Those are all of the weapons that I found.
So mine was on there.
Oh, it was. Which one is it?
It's the angel doll.
Oh, sure, of course.
But I labeled it as just a biblically accurate child.
Yeah. That's actually so perfect. Well, I just realized too, I didn't put like any of the tangible weapons. It's like the axe isn't on here, the 12 gauge shotgun, but those are fucking boring options.
Yeah,
come on now.
The real weapons don't matter.
Come
in this.
On now. This is where it's really at.
Yeah.
So in terms of my whichever weapon I'm going to choose, I'm going to go with, well, honestly, it's got the biggest body count. So I'm going to go with Mole Rat Krampus.
Yeah.
Which is essentially like three different monsters rolled into one, but we've both decided it's the same monster.
Yeah. Krampus. Krampus.
Why is it Krampus?
It's because it's like Krampus, but with a rat in it. Krampus.
Oh, Krampus. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Mole Rat Krampus.
Mole Rat Puss. Nope, that
but
sounds wrong.
Anyways. So for my rating, for quality, I gave this a 5 out of 5 mole rat Krampuses. I had so much fun watching this movie. It was so funny. It's entertaining. I think it's a great introduction to horror. I think I would show this to like young adults and like teenagers. I think they would really enjoy this movie.
Yeah, there's no slow parts.
No, it's really funny from the beginning. I feel like, you know, whether or not you dread going to your families over the holidays, you'll really enjoy this movie. I think you'll really like it if you just kind of like a fun, like, it's just a fun time. Like, I don't know. It's just funny. It's I can imagine it being like a little terrorized, like terrifying for like little kids, and being maybe like just slightly scary enough to really push that bar for maybe some really like preteens. But for anybody that's like over 15, I just feel like it would just be super funny. Like you would just laugh through the majority of it. And maybe that would help maybe some of the younger generation that would truly find parts of it to be really scary. So I thought the quality was off the charts. Obviously, for scariness, I rated it super low. It wasn't scary to me. I rated it a 2.5 mole rat Krampuses out of 5.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's scary for children. It's funny as fuck for adults.
Yeah.
That's just how it pans out. I'm sorry. But rewatchability. I said earlier, this is a new holiday classic of mine. I will be watching this every year. So I gave it easily a 5 out of 5 mole rat Krampuses out of 5.
I love that. I love that this is... For some reason, I just assumed that you had seen it.
Right.
And so I love that this is like already going to be a yearly thing because I watch this every year. I don't even just watch it around the holidays.
Right.
It's just a fun movie.
It's really good. It's entertaining.
So if I'm going to give it a rating in terms of a biblically accurate child, I'm going to say quality 5 out of 5.
Yes.
It is a beautifully done movie. Like the shots are perfect. The lighting's perfect. The way that they winterize the outside is gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
The creatures are simultaneously reminiscent of Christmas Cheer and Christmas Spirit while also being terrifying.
Yeah.
Like they just do such a good job. Even the gingerbread men are something you want to love even though they're trying to kill you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just very well done. Even the CGI for trying to make the gingerbread men come alive and that sort of stuff didn't look too fake.
No.
It was great. So yeah, 5 out of 5 biblically accurate children for quality. For scariness, I'd probably say around the same. It's like a 2, somewhere around there. It's not scary. There are a couple scenes that I'm sure if I were watching it in like a theater, they would have made me kind of like jump a little bit.
Yeah.
A couple of ones that are light jump scares. But it's, if you're anybody who watches any horror movies, it's not going to scare you.
No, not yet.
Yeah.
And then for rewatchability?
Oh, it's 5 out of 5. Easy. I watch it every year already. And then I kind of watch it throughout the winter too. It's not necessarily one that I just watch at Christmas time.
You'll watch it like into January and February.
Yeah. I'll just kind of watch it whenever. It's fun.
It's a good time.
It's one of the few scary movies that is family oriented.
I think so.
And
yeah.
So you can kind of have it on and not really worry about who's around or anything like that.
Nope.
It's not going to scare anybody.
No, it doesn't have any bad words in it. Like I was saying earlier, it has no gore. Like it's very like, it's almost like a made for TV movie.
Yeah.
Where like it has to be like popular to a mass audience.
Yeah, even when Linda like goes to axe the thing, she even calls it a fudger.
A fudger, like, yeah. Yeah. I wanted to pull up just one more scene before we call it for the night because I didn't mention this in any of my like favorite or scariest scenes, but I found it to be very entertaining. It's when Howard is having his ass kicked by those Christmas cookies. And I just like how all three of them are trying to man this like nail gun. Right. And the three of them together can get the nail gun to function. But it's just so funny how like very quickly it starts to overpower them and fall over. Right. And so like all three of them are like trying to like write it and get it up. And so that I found just to be really funny. And then when they run out of nails. Right. And so they put it down. They're like, ah, and they're just like sitting there trying to figure it out. And then Howard gets up. He blows something up behind them and they both land down and one of them dies on impact. Right. And one of them, they're both on fire, but one of them's more on fire than the other one. And you just hear him go, stop driving around. And I actually found out that those two that were on the ground doing that are Seth Green and Justin Roiland.
Oh my God.
And they both like turn around. They're like, hey, he's up. Get him.
Oh my gosh. And how well done that you're watching this, what is supposed to be a terrifying scene, and you're just like cackling.
You're just
at it.
Dying laughing. it's scary. He gets a couple of nails in his legs, right? But he's smart enough to grab like a cutting board and hold it. But I couldn't stop laughing when like they're all, you know, they're getting really excited. They're like, ah, oh my gosh. And then it starts to slowly fall over. They're like, ah.
They're like, too much. Oh, so good.
It's just so good. I just loved how entertaining that scene was. Like, you're supposed to be terrified for Howard, but I just couldn't stop laughing. Especially with the like, stop, drop, and roll. It's like, get up. You see him just, one of them was just like running around in circles, just like, ah. The other one's behind him, just like, get down. I'm like,
stop, drop, and roll.
Yeah, I want to watch it again right now, for being honest.
I'm sure I watched it today at work, and I'm sure that mom's gonna be like, when are we watching Krampus?
So
are we
watching it tonight?
Yeah.
You're like, yep, put it on.
She like, I watch it every year even when I'm not like around her, and she watches it several times.
Good ass fucking movie, and you should go watch it right. Yeah. Now
also, I was indoctrinated into horror by my mother, so mm-hmm. It's no surprise that she watches it as much as I do,
if not more frequently.
Yeah, as long as it's not too real. She won't watch The Strangers.
Yeah.
She won't watch The Crazies.
No, we don't get into that. The last thing that we typically do before we call it for the night is we just kind of talk about what we're doing right now. Like, What are we creating? What are we watching and reading? That kind of stuff.
So watching and reading, I'm not watching anything new, I don't think. I've been contemplating going back and rewatching The United States of Tara, and I might do that, especially now that Toni Collette is like in my field of vision again.
You got to finish Godless.
I do. I do need to finish Godless. I also still need to finish The Fall of the House of Usher.
You didn't finish that?
I still haven't finished it.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. And then I haven't been reading anything. No, that's a lie.
Inaccurate.
That's a lie. Last week, I was having a terrible mental health day, and so I was like, instead of going to the gym on lunch, which is dumb, the gym makes my mental health better, but I was like, I'm going to go to Powell's, which also helps my mental health. So I went and walked around for a little bit, and I didn't go in with the intention of buying any specific thing. I was just like, I'm just going to let Powell's tell me what I need. So I went in, walked around for a little bit, picked up a few things, put them back down. And then as I was about to leave, I saw another book and grabbed it. And it was called Something in the Woods Loves You. Mm. And I opened up the front cover, and the little blurb said that it was about this guy's experience going through major depressive disorder with suicidal ideation. And he ends up quitting his job and reconnecting with nature is a way to try to like find himself again.
Yeah.
And like recenter himself and try to find happiness. And I'm only like four chapters in. I'm reading like a chapter every night,
right,
somewhere around there. And it is a beautifully written book. It is one of the better ones I've read over the last couple of years. And I don't want to go too far into it, because I think that this is one of those books that just hearing the name of it in the little bit of a blurb, if it connects with you, it's going to connect really hard.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't fully connect, it just pass it by.
Yep.
But I know I needed this book in the minute that I grabbed it. And he goes through a timeline of like noticing an animal, and then he kind of connects that with how he's feeling, and then noticing like, oh, this animal is connected to this animal that I'm seeing, and goes through how that's connecting. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, oh, that one was found in this tree, and then this is how I'm feeling about this tree. Mm-hmm. And it's just beautifully written, beautifully done. And I would highly recommend that for anybody that's going through a period of sads.
I'll have to look it up because it sounds interesting.
It's really good.
Okay.
And then I do have one other thing. I've been binge listening to a podcast that is produced by Montana Public Radio called The Wide Open.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a podcast that goes into the Endangered Species Act and kind of what its status is now and the different ways that different groups either manipulate it for their own usage or use it for its actual intended purposes, and also goes into like conservation and how like ethical hunting is a form of conservation, mm-hmm. but also some people take that too far, and it's just a really broad scope on environmentalism in the United States.
Yeah,
and it's like a really interesting take on it.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. That's super interesting. I haven't really been watching anything. I did pick up a new Junji Ito book just a couple
days ago. Ito.
Yeah, he had a new one that was called Censor.
It's his first one in a while, isn't it?
I don't know. I actually don't know when it came out, but the cover itself looked new. So I would assume, but I don't actually know when it came out. I can look it up real quick. I literally just started it. It's about a town that's covered in like hair that comes from
Ew.
The mountain. It's like really thin and white, and it. Like, I haven't really got that far into it.
I don't know why I say you as if that's surprising. Like, that's last time it was spirals. And
right. I was going to see, when did this come out?
Oh, my gosh. While you look that up, he illustrated a book that was written by, I can't remember the author's name, but it's called No Longer Human.
Mm.
And it's also a book about the sads, but don't read it. It doesn't get happy. This guy kills himself.
Oh.
It's that's not a spoiler. It's on the front cover,
right,
or on the back cover. But he like killed himself shortly after writing this book. And Junji Ito decided to illustrate it. And it is beautifully done.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, this is from 2019. It is not a new book. Is not a new book.
I think he just recently came out with a new one, though.
Yeah. This is a Japanese manga series written and illustrated. I don't even know if he wrote this one or if he just illustrated it. But anyways, I will let you know how that one goes. I also downloaded a new book on Libby that I'm really excited for because it's kind of like a sequel to one of my favorite novels, which is Audrey Rose. By Frank DiFelita. And this one is called For the Love of Audrey Rose. And it kind of tells the story of the mother from the first book and how she's like trying to cope with like her daughter's death after she finds out that that her daughter was a reincarnated younger girl who had died in a tragic accident. Do you know the story of Audrey Rose?
I think so, yeah.
It's a very interesting story where it's like it's about the theory of reincarnation.
Yeah, there's like a past life recall and like that sort of stuff, right?
Yeah, it focuses on a family, mom, dad, and like their preteen daughter. And every year on her birthday, she has these recurring night terrors. And one day they find out that they're being stalked by this man, and he's been following them for weeks. And so finally they confront him and they're like, "Who the fuck are you?" And he's like, "I've been waiting to talk to you because I just wanted to verify that that's my daughter." And they're like, "What are you talking about? This is our daughter." And he's like, no, it is your daughter, but like, it's also my daughter. And so they're like, "Okay, sit down. Let's talk about it." And he says, "My daughter died like 11 years ago. That's how old she is. And after she died, I lost my wife too. So I just like, I took a sabbatical and I went to India and I went to Dubai and I went to all these places just to like find faith again."
Mm-hmm.
And while I was traveling, I would have things happen where like, a medium would come up to me and be like, "Your daughter goes to school here, blah, 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 blah." And he was like, "No, I don't. My daughter's dead." But she would talk to me as if like my daughter were alive. And these things kept happening where people would come up to him and be like, "I've seen your daughter. She lives in this room." And he was just like, they were describing places that Ivy lived when she was growing up. And so he came back to the States. He found Ivy Templeton and he started to follow her and started to realize that she was the like vessel that housed his daughter's soul, because as soon as Audrey Rose died, Ivy was born. And so her soul was just transferred into Ivy's body. And so every time Ivy comes back to her birthday, whenever she goes to sleep at night, she wakes up as Audrey Rose. And Audrey Rose just relives the last 5 minutes of her life where she died in a horrific car accident. And it's interesting that the further it goes on, like the further the psychosis goes on, the more that Ivy begins to suffer physically from these night terrors, like burning her hands on like a cold window and like...
Ooh, that's really
dying of asphyxiation and like blood loss, right? Like, like she goes, because it very quickly goes from this man just trying to convince the parents that like, hey, I don't want to take your daughter from you. I just want to be there for her, because he's the only one that can get her to calm down from these night terrors mm-hmm. by physically calling her Audrey Rose. Like he would show up to a night terror and be like, Audrey, come to me. It's daddy. And she would go to him, even though she didn't know who he was, and would find comfort there. And so it became like a whole legal battle, because he ended up kidnapping Ivy because the parents didn't want him around. They were like, absolutely, you can't be anywhere near our daughter. But obviously these night terrors kept getting worse. And so eventually he kidnapped her. And so when they got her back, they took him to court. And so like it has this whole legal proceeding, and now he has to prove in front of a judge that Ivy's actually possessed by Audrey Rose. And so it's a very, very interesting book. That it's a really good movie.
Yeah.
And now I'm reading the sequel to it. So
I want to read that.
It's fucking dope as shit.
I really want to read that.
It's really, really good.
Yeah, that
highly recommend. And I will tell
that gives me spine.
Yeah, feelings. A little spiny. Yeah. Yeah. And I will tell you, like, I know Frank DeFelita's written quite a few novels. And he, you know, he states that like quite a few of his works are based in some kind of reality, whether they're like some sort of actual event or like not necessarily paranormal, but just like some oddity that's happened. And I read his second book, Entity, which is about a woman who lived in California, and she was assaulted for years by a ghost that lived in her house. And I couldn't finish that book. That book was so scary, I physically could not keep reading it.
Ooh, okay.
And that's probably just because one of my lines is assault. So it was just really hard to like read that. Like, because like her kids witnessed it several times, and like they couldn't help. Like they would try and help her, and they would get thrown across the room and shit. Like, it was fucking nuts.
I should find a line for me.
A line?
Yeah, like one that I won't read that because that
oh
that does that.
Yeah.
I still haven't found one yet. Bugs under skin kind of gets to me sometimes.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, any kind of torture is kind of hard for me too.
I did read one recently where there were larvae in people's eyes.
No.
While they were still alive.
No.
Yeah.
Anything that has to do with like impregnation or like getting things. Mm-mm. No.
Yeah. I feel like that's a pretty good visual to leave people on.
I think so. I think that's a great visual to leave people on. So
rest your eye, larva.
Rest your eye, larva. Have a good night. Love you. Bye.
Yeah, bye. It's our whisper.